This Week in Palestine, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, IMEMC.org, for the week of August 11th through August 18th, 2006.
Lebanese families return to their devastated villages following a UN-brokered ceasefire.
The Israeli army continues its attacks on the West Bank and Gaza Strip, killing six.
President Mahmoud Abbas and Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh agree to form a national unity government.
And Palestinian infighting leaves one dead in the Gaza Strip. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. We'll begin our weekly report with weekly actions against the wall in the West Bank villages of Belayin and El Khader. Scores of Palestinian residents of El Khader village near the West Bank city of Bethlehem, supported by international and Israeli peace activists, marched to protest the apartheid wall that is being built on the village land. The demonstration began at around 1:30 p.m. following the Friday prayer, with peaceful chanting from the protesters calling on the international community to join them in the nonviolent resistance against the wall, the Israeli state, and construction companies that are building the wall. A significant feature of today's demonstration was the protesters' idea to make kites and fly them near the construction site of the wall. Bassam Ghanem, one of the local organizers who was in the protest, said villagers are persistent to continue protesting until the wall is removed.
This demonstration is organized in protest against the apartheid wall that is being built on the land of Al Khader village. This has become a weekly activity started 3 months ago. As you see, there is a large Israeli force that is preventing us from coming close to the construction site, and we will continue with these protests until we are able to remove this apartheid wall that is separating us from around 20,000 dunams of our land.
While the kids started building the kites, the army formed a line to prevent the demonstration from proceeding forward. The children present at the demonstration contributed to the nonviolent resistance struggle by painting slogans for peace and justice on their kites. And in Belayin today, August 18th, the Israeli army and the border police once again tried to prevent the weekly nonviolent demonstration in Belayin using force. Despite a military court decision in August 2005 that people in Belayin have the right to protest on their land on the village side of the wall. The International Solidarity Movement activists who were present at the demonstration said that before the demonstration even began, army and border police were already positioned within the village, that is, on the village side of the wall. This week's demonstration saw a new addition to the army's battery of weaponry used against nonviolent demonstrators, the water cannon. Water was fired from the cannon at the demonstrators, totally unprovoked, as soon as they were within range of the massive white tank. The water was a bright blue, and it is unknown whether the blue color reflected the presence of a harmful chemical. Many demonstrators were soaked by the cannon, dyeing their hair, clothes, and skin, and most of them reported subsequent burning and irritation of the skin. Tear gas was also used against the demonstrators as soon as the water cannon was engaged, so it is unclear whether the burning was from gas being absorbed into the wet skin and clothing, or whether the water itself contained a chemical. Regardless, the message from the Israeli army was clear. Nonviolent protest will not be tolerated and will be met by increasing displays of force. The theme of this week's demonstration was the continuity of the resistance in Belayin, and the villagers and activists steadfastly carried the message, "You cannot break our spirit." The Belayin Popular Committee Against the Wall and Settlements has organized weekly demonstrations since January 2005 against the wall and against the illegal confiscation of 60% of their farmland, and will steadfastly continue with their weekly demonstrations despite the army's apparent intent to forcefully prevent them.
Israeli airstrikes and shelling left five dead in the Gaza Strip this week, including a child, an elderly man, and a resistance fighter. Gaza's death toll since the beginning of Israel's Operation Summer Rains on June 25th has now reached 187. 43 children and 10 women are among the dead. 715 people have been injured, mostly civilians, including 194 children, 26 women, 4 paramedics, and 4 journalists. In Palestine, phone calls from the Israeli military have become commonplace. Mohammed Judah received such a call just before his home was demolished on Tuesday.
I received a call from a soldier saying, I am in the plane above you. Leave your house now, because we are about to shell it. So my family and I went outside our house, and before we even reached our outside gate, our house was shelled by the Israeli airplane. 11 of my family are injured, and my house is now rubble. My mother lost both of her eyes. My daughter was injured in her hand, head, and abdomen. 17 of our neighbors were also injured by the strike. They didn't give any reason. The soldier didn't say why they are shelling. He just said, leave the house now. We are about to shell it. That's the only thing the occupation army tells us.
Rafah Crossing Point, the only gateway for Palestinians in Gaza to travel internationally, has been closed now for over 2 months. Third-party European observers, normally present at the crossing point, have been locked out of their jobs by Israeli troops. Israel has lifted the closure several times for short periods, but thousands remain stranded on the Egyptian side of the border, subjected to unsanitary conditions and inadequate food and water. Despite the efforts of the Red Cross, seven have died waiting to be let back into Gaza, including an 18-month-old baby, a 15-year-old boy with a heart malfunction, and an elderly man. In the West Bank, the Israeli army invaded Askar refugee camp near Nablus, arrested three brothers from one family, and demolished their home. An elderly woman died of a heart attack when Israeli troops fired tear gas at her. Another resident died of wounds sustained a month earlier during an invasion into Jenin refugee camp that left two Palestinians dead and 18 injured. Israeli troops invaded several areas in the West Bank and injured 13 people, among them 8 children, a woman, and an Israeli peace activist who was shot in the head during a peaceful protest in Bilayin village. At least 50 residents were taken as prisoners during the invasions, including 5 children and 2 women.
Infighting erupted this week in Gaza when a new armed force created by Palestinian Interior Minister Saeed Sayyam clashed with armed supporters of Fatah. A child was killed and 6 individuals were injured. Just 2 days prior, a Palestinian official associated with Fatah had been killed. Meanwhile, 2 journalists working for Fox News, an American and a New Zealander, were kidnapped by an unknown Palestinian group. And President Mahmoud Abbas met with Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh this week to discuss the possibility of establishing a national unity government and a long-term truce between Palestinian factions. The formation of a national unity government was originally called for by the National Reconciliation Document, penned by imprisoned political leaders in Israeli jails. Haniyeh insisted that the new government would only be formed after the blockade by Israel was lifted and the over 80 legislators and ministers abducted by Israel had been released. Meanwhile, leaders of Palestinian factions in Gaza gave their initial conditional approval to an agreement for a truce with Israel. Islamic Jihad and the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine still express misgivings.
And finally, let's move to Lebanon, where a tentative ceasefire has been established after 1 month of Israeli bombing, devastating the country, killing over 1,200 Lebanese, nearly all of them civilians, displacing 1 million, or 25% of the country's population, and destroying entire villages and the country's infrastructure. 157 Israeli citizens were also killed, many of whom were Palestinians. 118 of Israeli casualties were soldiers, and many civilians in northern Israel lived in shelters during the war. The ceasefire came after the UN voted for Resolution 1701, which called for the cessation of hostilities between Hezbollah and Israel, the withdrawal of the Israeli army from South Lebanon, the disarmament of Hezbollah, and the deployment of UN and Lebanese forces in South Lebanon. It also called for a solution on the Shaba Farms, an area of Lebanon that has been occupied by Israel since 1979, and for Israel to hand over the maps of the 400,000 landmines it scattered across South Lebanon during its 22-year occupation of the country. Many in Lebanon balked at the language of Resolution 1701, which called on Hezbollah to cease all attacks, while asking Israel to stop only its offensive military operations. However, Israel maintains that it fought this entire war defensively and has vocally reserved the right to continue bombing Lebanon and to occupy the country until an international force, also called for by the resolution, arrives. Israeli military censorship of all media, that has been covering the Israeli-Lebanon conflict has been a major factor in the way this war is being presented to the world. Restrictions include reporting on Israeli casualties, reporting the location of Hezbollah rocket strikes, reporting of any rockets fired by Hezbollah into the Mediterranean Sea, and the fact that all reports must be approved by the Israeli Military Censors Office before they are released. This may have skewed international perceptions about the war. International news agencies reporting from Israel all agreed to the Israeli military censors restrictions, and for that reason, local reporters have argued that international audiences may not be getting the full picture. Jonathan Cook, a British journalist and political analyst in Israel.
Israel has applied its military censorship laws, so even if Hezbollah was hitting military installations, I don't think we could mention that. These laws, I think, can be abused quite badly by Israel and are. One incident where Israel referred to Hezbollah firing at a location next to a hospital. I can't be more specific than that without breaking these censorship laws. But the problem is that I know that hospital. I also know there's a very large military camp right next to it. So it's unclear to me what Hezbollah was targeting when it fired at that hospital or near it. And I think we need to be a lot more critical about what Israel is telling us. We shouldn't just take, as most commentators seem to be doing, Israel's word for it on this.
Displaced Lebanese began to return en masse to their destroyed villages as soon as the ceasefire went into effect. Despite government warnings of unexploded Israeli bombs and the Israeli military's threat to attack moving vehicles. Among the Israeli public, there is widespread criticism of the Israeli military's performance in the war, regarding the attacks against civilians. Mohammed Baraka, Palestinian member of the Israeli parliament, said Israel intentionally involved civilians in this war.
The Israeli government decided to involve civilians in this war in an unprecedented way. As a matter of fact, around 1 million Lebanese had to flee their homes and become refugees, and at least 1,200 Lebanese were killed as a result of the Israeli aggression. There is also a total damage to the infrastructure in Lebanon. Therefore, it is evident that Israel is the one who decided to target civilians in this war.
Israeli Chief of Staff Dan Halutz said the withdrawal from Lebanon would take months. But as thousands of displaced Lebanese returned to their villages, many Israeli troops had already fled. While Israel had claimed it had up to 30,000 soldiers in Lebanon, veteran reporter Robert Fisk wondered upon visiting the South if there had been more than 1,000. Apparently, the Lebanese and Israeli territories were not the only battlefield of this war. The war was also fought on the internet, with battles raging on forums, blogs, and email. Nigel Perry is with the Electronic Intifada website.
There's been a war going on in Palestine at some level for the last 100 years, and as technologies change from telephones to faxes to email and the internet, obviously those have been appropriated into the battle for public opinion, because in the end this is not going to be decided by who the superpower is, or how many weapons Israel has, and the balance of power it holds in the region. It will be decided by public opinion, as was South Africa. You know, people don't want to believe what they're actually seeing. It's like people have just stood by and watched this amazing destruction of an entire country's infrastructure in Lebanon. And meanwhile, there's this big fight going on about whether what we're seeing on the TV is real or not. And it's just, it's totally frightening and scary and disturbing.
Meanwhile, in Damascus, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad praised Hezbollah and said resistance is the only way to peace. He warned there would be no peace in the Middle East until Israel withdraws from land it occupies in Palestine, Lebanon, and Syria. He also criticized the United States for its involvement in Israeli wars of aggression. Assad's speech was strongly criticized by some Lebanese leaders, including Saad al-Hariri, leader of the majority bloc in the parliament, son of the slain former Lebanese prime minister, Rafik al-Hariri, and Waleed Junblat, a Lebanese Druze leader. Junblat has also criticized Hezbollah for not consulting with Lebanese people before going to war with Israel.
And that's just some of the news this week in Palestine. For constant updates, check out our website, imemc.org. As always, thank you for joining us. From Occupied Bethlehem, this is Nicholas Blinko,
Melissa Simpson,
and Hassan Banoura.